our beginning, the work session of the City of Cedarville City Council, which is held in the Community Rights Center, Tuesday, September 14, 2021, and we are starting at 6:10 PM. And we'll turn the time over to Mr. Goodwin for notice agenda items for regular city council meeting.
May I ask, is there? Pretty pleasant.
Let's start at the beginning.
The beginning? Okay, dive in.
Yeah.
So this rezone is a very simple rezone. It's one lot. It's moving it from the PR 2.2 to the R115,000 zone. So we pull up the zoning map. This is what the new zoning map would look like. My question is this one right here in the corner. Right now, you saw the current zoning map, you read it to PR 2.2. The reason for the zone change is that the property owner wants to have large animal rights. And you can see that if I were to zoom out here, you can see that most of the homes that are along Canyon Road, that especially the ones that face or corner on Canyon Road, are in the R115,000 zone. That extends up to this point here. So although it's kind of a weird notion to move one lot, it doesn't create this island in the middle of the city of R115,000. It's pretty contiguous with the R115,000 zone. So like I said, the reason he wanted to do the rezone was that he wanted large animal rights. Whenever you're doing a rezone, you do have to consider what you're giving them in addition, in this case, density. In PR 2.2 zone, he has the ability under the current code to subdivide that lot and add one more single family unit. When he moves to the R115,000 zone, it remains the same. He has the ability to subdivide and have one additional lot. He does not have the density to, he doesn't have the square footage rather to add another unit of density. So he's not getting a denser ability to subdivide because simply the only thing he's getting is large animal units. Large animal units are dictated by code in that you have to determine or designate a livestock area that is dedicated to horses or cows or whatever your large animal unit is, and it has to meet some sort of square footage for the number of animals that he has.
If he subdivides, does he still have the square footage on his lot to keep more animals?
No, he'd probably have to sacrifice that.
Okay.
Well, it depends on, I don't want to speak more, but it depends on how you do the subdivision, but most of the time that's a sacrifice that ends up getting it.
Small horses?
Not big. I don't know.
Cows?
It's usually horses. There's a lot in the middle of where this street right away would go. It's just this one corner lot there.
Yeah, there's like the north side of the place.
Any questions on this item? Want to move on to the next item?
Yeah.
All right, let's talk about short-term rentals then. So the Planning Commission's been working on this code for short-term rentals for a couple months now. And this is the proposal that they've made in that they would be allowed throughout the city on a limited basis. I think that's maybe the crux of the discussion that was had online, is there is an impact, and I think people come down to one side or the other when it comes to short-term rentals or even accessory dwelling units. We want to talk about balancing property rights versus the right to develop or do with your property what you see fit versus what's good for the neighborhood, what's good for the community, right? One of the concerns I heard specifically my neighbor rents out their basement to people, and they live there for a year and come out, then move out, then a new one moves in, and a new one moves out. I never get to know my neighbors. So there's like this degradation of trust in neighbor. With short-term rentals, I think that's exacerbated in that you really just see comings and goings of people, right? But a lot of people do these short-term rentals as a way to afford their home, specifically in homes that are near or within direct short driving distance of large destinations, so ski resorts. So in the event that, let's say, snowbird came over the mountain and they had a lodge up in American Fort Canyon, I think you would see a great deal of short-term rentals pop up in Cedar Hills, like you would see in Mill Creek or in Cotton Heights for the ski resorts up there. In St. George, they also have a lot of short-term rentals. That's been an issue for years down there as the hotel lobby is struggling to buy them. And also there's certain neighborhoods where they've designated, say they've said, short-term rentals are okay here, and short-term rentals are not okay over here. But the way we would tackle this is that we would, this is what the Planning Commission is recommending, is that you could do a short-term rental. They would be limited in city, and let me go to that real fast. They did it based on the voting precinct map. So that's what you have here, is the voting precincts. They wanted to divide it up into communities, and rather than create new communities, like micro communities in Cedar Hills, they just decided, let's just use an established one, let's use the zoning map, or the, not zoning map, sorry, the voting map. So based on the formula that they are proposing, each voting precinct would be allowed to have two short-term rentals, plus one for every 200 units. So let's take this purple Cedar Hills voting precinct 3, for example. In that, there are 723 homes. It is our biggest voting precinct in terms of single count homes. So you'd have two plus three, because they don't quite make it to 800, but they get two for each, one for each of the up to 600. So they would have five in this area. Throughout the city, based on a quick total, we would have 19 short-term rentals.
These are owner-occupied.
Yes.
You have a number for each precinct.
Yes. Okay. In Cedar Hills, one, it would be three. This includes the two plus.
Uh-huh.
So a total of three. Cedar Hills two would be four. In Cedar Hills three would be five. In Cedar Hills four, it would be three. And then in Cedar Hills five, it would be four. So that's Councilmember Miller, that's a great point, is that the Planning Commission felt very strongly that if we're going to allow short-term rentals, then they need to be owner-occupied. And not just owner-occupied, but owner-occupied at the time of the rent specifically. In that way that most of the negative aspects that you might have in terms of how a short-term rental impacts the neighbors, you're thinking, again, like maybe a rental property or an ADU, it's the noise, it's the parking, is this going to become a Friday frat house where, college comes and rents it for the night and they have a vendor and then they're gone on Saturday and I'm just left with all the debris. By keeping it owner-occupied, I feel like there's a person on the premise that is regulating that. There's accountability, exactly. So
Chandler, I did an extraordinary deep dive into this topic, something I probably never want to do again on a topic, but this was kind of a rabbit hole for me. But I looked at HB 253 and HB 82, and both of those wanted, and actually HB 221, which didn't pass, but keeps rearing its head every year. They all want to make sure we can do short-term rentals, but they all put that thing in about the owner occupied. So I think it's coming, and it's coming for all of us.
They're owner-occupied?
They are owner-occupied. Every one of those said owner-occupied.
Okay.
253 was the one where we can't use Airbnb control and find out who's doing it. But no. So what they did is they took out the piece where it said you have a lot of short-term rentals, but they left in the trolling part. And that bill was only that part. But I think it's coming. And the thing, this was the angstiest part online, was people saying we're picking winners and losers, like, you know, if you do two, and then I want to do it the next year to afford my house, and I can't do it. So I don't like this piece. I think that's what we're going to hear mostly tonight, is what we mostly heard online. I would rather just, you know, like I said, those bills, when they come, are going to apply to everyone, like the AMP one did. So it's going to preempt us anyway. We're going to be looking at this again. And I think if it's good for somebody, it's good for everybody. If you think that someone should be able to afford their home, then everybody should be able to.
There is that, I think, that way to approach this. Conversely, I mean, we could take the same approach that I think Hiram and Craig and I have had discussions about assisted living facilities. The city used to have provisions, assisted living facility code, that prohibited them within, I think it was a quarter mile of one another, because there's this notion you can find an old home, upgrade it, make it an assisted living facility, and then you have these parking issues on Sunday night when everyone wants to visit mom and dad and assisted living facility. So a code that we've talked about re-implementing is this radius, saying that we don't want these close to one another. And so you could take the approach that we don't want this renter's row of short-term rentals, because what will that do to anybody? I'm just playing devil's advocate here, because I mean, there are two sides to this coin on this. But I think the more important thing is the owner occupancy, because again, when you're thinking about what impact does this have, much of that is mitigated by the accountability of the individual being on site during the rental. If they're not on site during the rental, then I think that's something that we need to talk about and the city needs to enforce. That if they're not there, then we issue a citation.
Yeah. And I feel like with those other pieces, the owner occupied piece, the noise, the trash, the parking that goes along with this, that I don't know. I'm just hesitant to say two in that giant purple area. And then how do we, what? Even then, though, that's 700 houses. And how do we,
townhomes.
Yeah, but how do we decide this first come, first serve, and then we only got enough for a year?
I don't know another one. Well, I think if you first come, first serve, I don't know another way to regulate that.
Right.
So as long as they had it, they met the obligations.
Is it for like 1 year and then we do it again?
See, that's the thing, it would be like perpetuity, and then that means that no one else is ever losing that zone.
You can't take their business away from them and say your time is up.
You get 1 year to do this.
Right. Which is why I don't think that we should pick winners and losers and choose people who get to do it.
There has to be a limit at some point.
But if these laws pass, there won't be, just like the ADUs. They want it for just ADUs. You can't limit it for anyone. That's exactly what these two bills said, and they're coming back. We have to allow short-term rentals as long as they need a business license, we need parking, we need noise, we can do a ton of other things. We can't just say no short-term rentals.
For example, what if they make us do that? Because right now, from your research, there's only five in the entire city.
So, right, but the problem is if it's not limited, it's allowed. So then people are just going to do it anyway.
Right.
Right. There's no teeth.
But we can prohibit it now until the state says you can't.
Are you saying not prohibiting it, you're limiting it?
Limiting, not prohibiting, sorry. Limiting, yeah. So until the state comes in and says, you can't put a number on it. I just think that's going to be the hardest part, and I think that you're going to, it's just, I don't like it, that's my opinion. I don't want neighbors to be against neighbors. I don't think there's going to be a ton anyway, so I'd rather...
No, but I mean, there has been discussion about like recreational development of American Fort Canyon, mm-hmm. and I honestly feel like if Snowbird were to build a gondola with access to their resort up American Fort Canyon, it's still not like, you know, big or little Cotton Canyon where you have three or four resorts up there. You still have a resort. So all of a sudden, here's the nearest civilization to that resort. So here's a great place to bring a family to stay. And Snowbird's your place, preferred place of recreation.
ADUs are, you can't do anything with that. They're everywhere. Even HOAs.
Yeah. And the code says if you have an ADU, you can do it nightly rental.
Yeah.
If you already have an approved ADU, it can become a nightly rental. And that's not
our current code.
This doesn't
say that.
The proposed code says
for the short term rental.
It allows your ADU to become a nightly rental.
If we pass it, though, not currently.
I might have a different opinion. I don't know. Maybe it's closer to what I'm saying. But I don't know. I think that when it's owner occupied, that there's enough accountability where the problems can be limited. And think that we should limit, my opinion, short-term rentals in owner-occupied homes.
That's my opinion, exactly.
And potentially, because I own one of those townhomes right by the mouth of the canyon that would be absolutely perfect if Snowbird went up the canyon. And to me, it's that balance of the private property rights versus the best situation for the community as a whole. And it's hard because I think of myself, like, that could be a really nice retirement, you know, 20 years from now. You know, if I were able to not live there and rent it out.
If I can add, I think what you said is the underlying theme of everything we're talking about tonight. We talk about recreational vehicles, we talk about run-on solar, short-term rentals. We're saying, where is the line between the individual property's rights to do what they want versus what's the
And I think that no matter what happens with the recreational vehicles and the trailers, I think we learned a bit about the, well, you know, we heard it. We heard it. So I don't want to just rush into something and vote on it the very first time that it comes up. I think this is something that to chew on a little bit more. I know that you and the staff have already done a ton of work. But obviously the council needs to be comfortable with it. So I don't know. I think that's learning from the recreational vehicles. I think it might be a little too quick to jump in on.
I think that's a prudent thing. I mean, the Planning Commission, they had no problem tabling this for a few meetings. And Councilor Smith, I appreciate you doing some legwork to get a better understanding, because these do affect your neighborhoods. You know, you will find that if you go out and talk to your neighbors, I would venture guess that you would find people on both sides of the what's good for the community versus what's good for the individual. And it's great when those two line up, but a lot of times they are at opposition to one another.
Well, I'll say that argument from the state for not allowing whole homes is the problem there's going to be in Park City and in Moab and everywhere else where there's no housing anymore because you can make triple your money on nightly rentals, which are essentially, when you think about it, hotels and a residential zone. So it's not really what people signed up for, and so I think that's why they keep coming back to owner-occupied, because they really, that's really the only way. If they're going to keep saying we need affordable housing, they can't then turn around and say we can turn whole homes into Airbnb. So if this is done right, no one would even know we have an Airbnb.
Yeah.
Okay. And that's the theory, right? So, I mean,
it's like having roommates.
What's that, Charles?
It's like having roommates.
Right, yeah. And if you are there and being swayed by the no limit thing that people will limit themselves. Not everybody's going to want to do that. So I don't want strangers in my house in and out all the time. But some people won't want it.
There is something very strong about the accountability of the homeowner being present. I mean, I don't hear a ton of complaints about ADUs. You get parking issues, but
beyond parking.
Yeah, beyond parking, it's usually not an issue with noise or parking because there's basically the VFM is on site. There, the person is in charge, right? It's not like we have problems with rental homes. We have problems with, there's a company called American Homes for Rent that they come snap up every property that they can, and they own quite a large number of materials, and they rent them out, and let it out to a management company to take care of it. Well, these are the kind of properties we have problems with unkempt yards, with parking, with noise. These are the problems we have. So,
and those are the kind, I think, that it would be super attractive to turn that into an Airbnb instead of having a rental.
Oh, yeah.
We're already hands off and not there. There's problems multiplying. And, you know, people make the argument too that, like, well, I mean, like, if you live right now, I can have a giant family party in my backyard, right? And no one can do anything about that except for noise or trash or maybe even cars that are parked in front of other people's driveways. So we allow those sorts of things, and that hopefully you're home, right? So what we're talking about. Airbnb is just a lot of money, and it's a business. It's a serious business, so I think we need to. And we need to have something, because like I said, if we don't permit it, then it's allowed, and now we have to come back. You know, people just do, and it's just a lot left right now. I thought it'd be funding coming our way anyway, but it's not allowed.
So what recourses do we gain by having requirements for the business license?
We know where they are. When we know where they are, we get a complaint from me and say, hey, such and such happened at such and such a location last night. Can you please do something about it? We can look and say, oh, these guys have short-term rental. And we reach out to them, we can get some investigator to find out what was it. Was it the short-term rental? If it's a problem with the short-term rental, well, then we have some code here that we can go back and say, like, we're going to issue a citation, we're going to issue a warning based on this complaint we received. If it's just you being an obnoxious neighbor, then that's a different thing. It's a different thing. But, you know, when we have them on record and we find that there's the same individual and the same problems over and over again, then we can revoke that license. And when they continue to rent it out, then there's another, it could be a Class C, Class D misdemeanor, I don't know what it would be.
That's where I'm going with it. We have some action that we can take.
There is some action.
Yes, to mitigate issues that pop up. The other question I've got tonight, honestly, I have no idea where this falls, is what about the HOAs?
Right now, my understanding is the HOAs can't prohibit them.
Because the state hasn't said they can't. The state specifically said the HOAs cannot prohibit ADUs. They haven't said anything about it, so we believe it.
The difference between ADU and short-term rental is the length of stay. Short-term rental is up to 29 days, first day of code. Past 30, it's considered long-term rental. So if they have a long-term rental, then HOAs, I don't think they can do anything about it. But short-term rentals, they can.
So with some of these neighborhoods, I'm sure we'll see that pop up. And that's a little different. But it's worth mentioning to people in HOAs, they have options for now. With regards to business license, that actually makes it fall on the side of, hey, why don't we just allow them with the owner occupied, because we have employees. If it gets out of hand.
That's how Washington City, actually, the reason they require the business license, because then if they show up and you're in a not, they have zones, but if you're not in a non-original zone, that's the first way to get you, the $500 for not having a business license. Because it's hard to get beyond the noise because nobody's there anymore, and someone's worried against someone else's. But if they come and somebody says, yeah, I'm renting this place, and they're like, you're not, because you don't have a business license and you don't live in a non rental zone, it's not my $500 fine, and that's how
we
get
that
to move along like
it's
supposed to.
We're not in one of these areas where, you know, people are knocking down the city doors to do short-term rentals. I am afraid, though, with basic economics, that if you were to create scarcity, saying there's only 19 in the city,
yeah,
race to be the first, then you will have people just, I'm not going to rent it out, but just in case I want to,
right,
in 2023,
exactly.
I've got them.
Right.
So, at a minimum, I would say we at least start with the requirement of the business license if we don't already require that.
There's an application. I can make sure that the language does include business licenses.
One thing I mentioned when I was looking through it was, if it does, is people will say, well, I didn't know this was a part of it. I didn't know that was a part of it. And you can put in the application a little box that says, you received a printout of the ordinance. So once you check this off, you're responsible for whatever's in the ordinance when you got your application. There's none of that. Well, I didn't know what I was supposed to be doing.
So I think when we have this discussion in the council meeting, it would be very beneficial to give us some direction to staff and say, who do we want this to look like? We reviewed this, thank you. Here's what we want it to look like, and bring it back. Right? And so maybe someone can table this item, and then we can make those changes and bring it back. It won't require a public hearing, so it's easy to bring back. And then it also allows you to talk to your neighbors, get a sense of how they feel about it, not just the ones that want them, but the ones that see the other side of the issue.
I had a question on the one-year, maybe two nights. Where there's a lot between that.
It's less than that.
And that thing, if they don't want to register an ADU, that's if they just want a short-term rental, or don't want to rent an ADU.
But if they are an ADU, they can rent through every night.
And then I also had a question on the number of people allowed. So I was looking at this, no more than four unrelated persons in the city. Me and my four friends from Idaho State in a nightly rental in Cedar Hills and have a little girl slumber party, we couldn't do it. Five of us couldn't do it. Even though we arrived in one car and.
The reason I do that is because my family do it. We look at four unrelated individuals as a housekeeping unit. Anything beyond that, we're not going to grant it. So if you had a house and you didn't want to make a mortgage payment by yourself, you could get three other friends to come live with you.
But not four.
It's Golden Girls House. And, you couldn't get four. If you have four total, you have three other people. And that's the limit of our group, that's the limit of our group living arrangements.
And I think it matches our ADU requirements too, right?
I want to buy you, well, hopefully we have some people here that want to express their position on them, and I'd be happy to hear them tonight and have additional discussion, but at this point I'm anticipating that I'd like to make a motion. You guys can overrule if you want.
I think for tabling, as long as we have a good solid discussion of how to move forward and we don't just talk about it.
Right, some instructions for staff.
That's why I say it's really frustrating to have a really long discussion and then you table it and then I go back to work tomorrow and I have no idea where to go. At least in direction. I mean, we want to see when it comes back. Okay. Next, ground mount solar. So we went from.
I'm the poster child for this entire thing.
We're all lined up for one meeting.
Yeah.
Right?
Exactly.
So on ground mounted solar systems, again, this is where do the rights of the property owners extend to where do the best for the neighborhood? We originally were discussing an outright ban on ground mounted solar, saying we don't want this. Planning Commission really balked at that idea. They didn't like it. They wanted to see it on a very limited basis. And that's why you have provisions in here that has to be at least 10 feet from any property line. So you're pulling it away from those that are most impacted. That it can't cover more than 50% of the rear side yard setback area. So that it's you're not just turning your backyard and side yard into a solar farm. The maximum height from 20 feet, which is the height of an accessory structure, down to 6 feet, you know, which would be the height of a fence. So if you are aggrieved by your neighbor's ground mounted solar, a 6 foot fence will make it so you never see it again, unless you're looking out the upstairs window. The only way you can go higher than that is through an administrative conditional use approval, which the applicant has to demonstrate that there's minimal visual impact on the surrounding properties. Because Mike, we actually used your property as the big one up on the hillside as the example, saying, well, why is this, how many acres is that?
14.6.
14.6. This individual has a...
It's not my property anymore.
This individual has a 10-foot system. Who's he inhibiting? Who's he aggrieving? Nobody. So there's got to be a provision that not all lots are the same, right? And then they have to be located in the lots with at least a minimum of 11,000 square feet in size. So you're taking some of these tiny lots and saying, you just can't do it. We don't want them to block any easements, right-of-ways, and especially stormwater conveyance systems. And then we wanted to exclude some of these small vector systems because we have a client commission that gets right into the details. They said, what about solar lights that you put in your garage?
Ground state ones.
Yeah. I don't care. But it's technically ground mounted solar, I guess. So it would exclude those. And then we also, as a city, we added an exception for some of our systems. We have some equipment on tanks that require solar panels for power. So we carved out an
exception for public utilities, public utility facilities. I'd love to hear your comments, thoughts on this as well.
Well, obviously we're grandfathering the existing unit, right? That was too much to go for. But my only problem with the exception is you gotta kind of talk to your neighbors and stuff, which is great for the neighbors who currently live there, but then what if it really is hideous and the next neighbors do mind? I don't love the exception for height. I might be okay with like number of units, but I hate to be arbitrary on this and or not be.
Well, we're trying to not be arbitrary. And that's why what your neighbors say shouldn't matter.
Right.
Because it really shouldn't come down to public clamor one way or another.
Yeah.
It's there's three provisions that have to be met in order for administrative conditional use approval to be granted. One, the applicant must demonstrate that the environmental solar energy systems have a minimum visual impact on the surrounding properties. Because we can't look at the city and say every property is shaped the same way or has the same topography. Because you could have a home that sits on a hillside and the homes that's down below and the backyard goes way up, similar to what you have, and they can put the ground mounted solar way up on the hillside, it's 10 feet away from the property line, but it blocks everyone's view but the homeowners. Well, that's a problem. Let's say the overall height of the ground mounted solar systems are not projected above the ridge line of the roof of an existing home. That keeps it, even if you put it up on the hillside, it keeps it to a certain amount, to a certain extent, down or lower from what they could potentially do. You understand what I'm saying?
Oh, I do.
So the top of the system can't extend past the top of the ridge line. So
right.
your view shed isn't inhibited by this new solar panel that goes about 10 feet above the old home. It's at the same level. And then the last one is that it should locate on parcels with minimum 11,000 square feet size. So that's where we're saying this just isn't for everybody. We have some quite large lots in the city, and we have some quite small. And we unfortunately cannot treat them all. They all can't. You can't do everything with your little property.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, that's just the way it is.
So having been impacted the most, and by some of those things we're mitigating the impact that I experienced, I guess my problem is, what if the city decides it's minimal, and I say it's not minimal, and it's my view and my backyard that's being affected, you know what I mean? So it's kind of tough on like, what's the recourse for a resident? Because clearly, in my situation, my neighbor viewed that as minimal, and I don't view that as minimal, and, you know, so where's the...
I would say if you have a measurement or a guide that you want to add into that language,
yeah.
I'd love to hear.
Well, the other problem is that you don't know. Like, as a neighbor, I don't know that my neighbor went. We did not know my neighbor went and got that permit.
Mm-hmm.
So we didn't know until we got back from vacation, and we had a 15-foot solar panel in our backyard that looks like it's in our backyard. So how do you notify a neighbor so they even have the chance to tell you what the mitigation might be? So I think if you're asking for the exception and you're stating that it's a minimal impact, you've got to go find out that it's a minimal impact.
Well, I think it requires an on-site visit.
Okay.
But I hate to say, I just personally hate the notion that this person wants to do this, we're going to do a public hearing and notify your neighbors, because a lot of times, someone may be doing something that will get the neighborhood riled up. We spent a lot of time, let me just use an example because nobody's done this so far. But we spent a lot of time when I first got on the planning commission back in 2012, and I think Colleen over there, we talked about catteries a lot, cat houses. I can't tell you how much time I spent on this, but it was a lot of time, right? So we carved out code for cat houses to this day. We carved out this code for a cattery, and to date, but we spent hours on this stupid thing. Pardon me. It was awful. But we spent all this time on it, and to date, we don't have any. But we have code that allows it. So let's say that somebody moves into the city and says, I'm a feline friend, I am going to do a cattery. And they do it, right? And they meet all the provisions. But, you know, there is going to be an impact on the neighbors around you, whether it's the facility itself, or the smell, or the meows, whatever it is, there's going to be an impact. But if they met the criteria that was outlined in the code, staff has no choice but to say yes. So if I were to go out and say, let's do a public hearing and see what the neighbors think about this cannery, I know what they're going to say. But unfortunately, public clamor doesn't factor into that decision. And so in this case, we want to make the rules clear enough that public clamor is outside the realm. That when staff, and you're correct, when staff is doing the review, when there is a need for an administrative conditional use approval, that the standards are set and clear, and that there's not any, I'll use your word, there's no arbitrary level of judgment.
Right.
So that's what I'm saying. If there's a way to measure that, or to put that impact in writing in a way that is measurable and loving.
I'd rather do that. I still think if you're going to give someone an exception, there's still got to be rules to that, what that exception can mean. So then it still can't be 20 feet. It still can't be this much of your yard, or else it's just, you know, kind of whatever you think and whatever they think. And there is no real code to it because you're saying you might give an exception and you might not. So that's what I would like to see, just because I can't imagine if mine had fallen into that and then we were just left with the, you know,
I'm not as familiar with Grand Mountain Solar as you are. 6 feet doesn't seem very high, but the reasoning makes sense to me. Are there possibilities?
I'll give you two examples of systems that I would never want to buy. One is Kelly's.
It's a situation,
that they have these poles and they're mounted and they look like, you know, when you're driving out the prim towards California and there's this solar farm out there. So,
and they turn and they turn
and they do it in a way that sometimes it could go over the property level.
Yeah.
It's a real problem. And so they can't turn it and keep it in a way that it's over the property level. It's a mess. This was a couple of years ago. This was the genesis of this whole discussion. The second one I've seen, it's not in our community, but it's in Highland. If you go turn S192 south on, I forget the road, but it's the one that has the steep dip. You come back up the other side. As you're heading south, you come back up the top. On the east side of the road, there's a person that has ground mounted solar on two. It's in two panels. Yeah, it's in panels like facing north or south. But it's just
on the north side of the house facing south.
Yes, that's it. So. I'm going to go on the record of saying it is so.
I agree. Absolutely.
And so as we talk about what we want to see our community, that's why we're saying we don't want this in the front yard. When you live on a street side setback, we don't even want it on the side of that house. We want it to be kept away where people don't see it.
And it's enough, Brian, to like the ones on top of your house. So the generator would be you would need for your house, but not to resell to the resell the Rocky Mountain or which is the kind of what I'm looking at. I mean, it looks extremely commercial and really interesting. I have a question about the solar easement. What's that about?
Solar easement?
Mm-hmm. Number four. The last page, so number four, solar easements.
This is to preserve their ability to generate power with the ground mount. So let's say that I put ground mount solar in my backyard, and there was a possibility that my neighbor would come in and plant trees to block my ability to receive sun on my solar panels. I could negotiate with them that they could not plant trees to block the ability for light to penetrate through that block.
But since it gets recorded with the county recorder, they can.
Yeah, it would be an easement.
Yeah.
An easement in favor of.
On someone's property? Your neighbor's property?
Yeah.
We have to agree.
The neighbor has to agree. I can't just go record it. I have to go talk to my neighbor. But then the reason it's recorded.
There's no neighbor going to agree to that.
I would agree to that. But then that, if it's recorded for property, when that neighbor sells their property, the buyer then has the ability to see, oh, this is this.
this was made as an agreement, and I need to be holding that step. So it runs into that.
So you want specific language on the exceptions, and that's my deal. I like at least like how big of a yard do you have to ask for an exception? How big can it be even if you get an exception? And I'm not just an open-ended, we might consider something else, because then the rest of our codes are not, if we're gonna give somebody an exception without any rules on how they qualify for an exception. And I think those 14 acres might qualify, but if we're just gonna say any size lot, and if you wanna come and ask for an exception, then the code's meaningless. So, I'd like to carve out something where you leave room for those places where it makes sense for somebody to maybe do that, but you know, don't just nullify our code and make it work.
But then how do we decide what those parameters are?
Like we decide on it, just not gonna have it. It's either this code, or if you have a really big lot, it's this code. That's my opinion.
You can be somewhat arbitrary in drafting a code, you just can't be arbitrary in enforcing it. So if you can say, you know what, 6 feet's too small, we're gonna make it 8. And it doesn't have to necessarily be a rationale behind that change, just you can choose whatever you want to see in your community. But when we enforce that, we can't be arbitrary about how we enforce it.
So are you saying maybe lots an acre up can have exceptions, or is that what you're looking for? Yeah, or with it, I mean, you know what our zones are. Maybe like we need large animals, or, you know, if you're gonna apply for it, you don't.
So you limit it to like R15 and PR20,000?
Decision not to have the city breakfast at that point. Normally do it in August.
COVID
from last year.
We didn't do it last year. Last year was the first year we didn't do it due to COVID. This year we've talked about it, but we've tried to maybe talk about shifting it from the, because quite frankly, I don't know how the beautification committee, the Arts Girls committee,
ended up with that task.
Yeah. I got put in charge of city breakfast. I just don't know how that happened, but it happened. I would actually like to make it a fireman's breakfast.
Yeah, and have it. That's exactly what I meant. Because Highland just did it.
The police have fire.
Police have fire.
So,
we're the only city
that I know of that does a free breakfast in the community. Most of them use the fireman's breakfast as a way to raise some funds for the firemen. So they can have great steaks. I don't know that he's supposed to.
This time it was an actual fundraiser for one of their
fireman. Yeah, so they have good causes. But they usually are the ones that put it on and host it. It's a way for them to get people in their facility and interact with the public. It's a great thing. We've used the firemen in the past. They've done a lot of
cooking. Yeah, they've cooked a lot.
But I'd love to, even if we just gave them a budget for it, and said, here you go, we want you to do this.
And we could also have the YCC hub. We could ask them to weigh in. They'd like to add that to
their agenda.
Oh, somebody's cleaned up. Yeah.
We've had that. In the past, we've had to go, we were to work with Walmart to donate employee time to come in. And then we raised this up.
Yeah.
It was. They're a big community partner.
Yeah. Okay. We'll save item number 8 for the evening, so. All right, well, motion to adjourn. Thank you. All in favor?